Now, our thinking was this. The hardest thing to do in this league is to get a proven start. And it's just very hard to do. It's hard to do in free agency. It's hard to do in trades. You get very few opportunities to do it. The guy's a five-time All-Star. He's been an All-NBA guy. Puts you in the top 15 guys in the league. He's only 28 years old. We know the injury history. That's the risk on it. That risk was worth it because of the talent that we're bringing back. We're not in a situation where we can be that choosy, and we can't necessarily go and try to do it the same way as everybody else. We're going to be different. Yeah, our money and our talent is in our big guys and in Reggie when we get him back. We don't have him, obviously, tonight, and Thursday's questionable.
They haven't had that kind of veteran, grown-up superstar. They can't get a Blake Griffin in free agency, and they haven't drafted one. They saw an opportunity in Detroit to get a star, and don't underestimate the importance of Blake Griffin as a ticket seller. This is an all-in move for Stan Van Gundy and their regime. They've got to get in the playoffs, and they've got to show some progress. The Pistons, they've really been in a free fall, almost out of the Eastern Conference playoff, the top eight, and they were motivated to get a deal done. And the Clippers didn't know whether they would trade Blake Griffin if the right deal would come along. They certainly had been very focused on DeAndre Jordan, Lou Williams, but this was a deal for them that made sense, and both sides wanted to move fast on it.
I talked to Jeff Bauer, the Pistons GM, tonight, and you know they liked the idea that he played with a big center in DeAndre Jordan for several years, to be able to figure out how to play with Drummond. They certainly think it can work. They need his veteran presence, and they need a superstar in Detroit, and he gives them that. They can't get that player in free agency. And they have a brand-new arena in downtown that's empty. They hope he can sell some tickets. They want to reshape that franchise without bottoming out, and that's why getting back in this deal two starters and Harris and Bradley, but also getting that first-round draft pick, likely it'll be in 2018, the Pistons pick, and now they have DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams, who they also hope they can get first-round picks for. Now you have a chance to have multiple first-round picks here in the next couple of years to start reshaping this team that certainly was very top-heavy with that $170 million-plus they would have owed Griffin over the next 5 years.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a good Tuesday afternoon. Welcome into this edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Kushlin filling in for Bob. He's out today. That'll be the case tomorrow. I believe he's in Washington for the State of the Union, regardless of what you think of that. Good for him. And I am hanging out with you today and tomorrow. And oh, my goodness gracious. It happened again, folks. Every time, no matter who's the main host of this program seems to be, every time it is I, Jim Kushlin, sitting behind the microphone from 3 to 5, you can usually bet that something big in the sports world happened. Whether it's big national or big as far as local and regional. Today, we have the latter. And how appropriate that of these 2 days, my plan was to kind of have a Detroit/Michigan-centric type day, and then a Cleveland/Ohio-centric type day. And out of the blue, I happened to pick today as the Detroit and Michigan one. To that end, later on at about 4:30 or so, we had a really fascinating interview, Bob and I, last Friday with the Michigan State beat writer for MLive.com, Kyle Austin, on the whole situation with Michigan State and Nassar and all that stuff. It was a fascinating interview, and we're going to play that again for you today. From now until then, though, we have one story and one story to talk about today. That is the Detroit Pistons. Last night, it started to come out right about the time Drive Time with Mike Miller was done at 6, that Blake Griffin has been traded to the Detroit Pistons. The full deal, Blake Griffin, along with Bryce Johnson and Willie Reed, to the Pistons for Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban, a second-round pick that I believe is 2019 draft, and a protected first-round pick for this upcoming draft here this summer, 2018. When we say protected, though, you can rest assured it will be going to the Clippers this year because the protections are 1 through 4 in 2018, 19, 20, and unprotected in 2021. Before Blake Griffin, after Blake Griffin, there's no way, short of one of those lottery miracle balls, that the Detroit Pistons would be picking in the top four. I'm 97% sure that pick will convey to the Clippers for this draft. So the Pistons have no first rounder in this draft coming up. But injury issues aside, and there's been plenty in his career, they have a player with name recognition now in Blake Griffin. Pistons right now have lost 8 in a row. And by the way, side note, it will be 9 in a row after tonight. And no, that's not trying to give props to the Cleveland Cavaliers, their opponent at Little Caesars Arena, completing the home and home. They played Sunday in Cleveland. It'll be tonight in Detroit. Has nothing to do with the Cavs. Side note, should the Cavs lose this game tonight, I will be spending the vast majority of tomorrow's show in for Baba by Cleveland/Ohio-centric day bashing the Cavaliers. Because Blake Griffin will not be in uniform for the Pistons tonight, still pending the physical. And depending on who you talk to with the team, including Stan Van Gundy, who you heard in the montage from his presser on this morning, they're going to try to get Griffin in either Thursday against the Grizzlies or Saturday against the Miami Heat. That will be his Piston debut. So he will not be playing tonight. By the same stretch, neither will Boban off the bench or Avery Bradley or Tobias Harris. In other words, at least for tonight only, sorry to say, Pistons fans, and shame on you Cavs if you can't win this one, it's Andre Drummond and a few role players. Emphasis on the few, because you talk about shorthanded, the Pistons are going to be shorthanded tonight. No Tobias, no Avery Bradley, no Boban, they've all been traded away, and Blake Griffin will not be ready to make his Pistons debut until at least Thursday. So it's Andre Drummond, and because Reggie Jackson's hurt, it's Andre Drummond and a bunch of role players tonight. So Cavs, you will get my full anger if you can't win this one tomorrow. As for the Detroit Pistons themselves, I've now had almost 24 hours to digest it. First notation, with this deal, the Detroit Pistons now have the highest payroll in the NBA for 2017-2018. Blake Griffin in, subtracting Bradley, Harris, and Boban, the Pistons' payroll for this year is a gaudy $144 million. For comparison, the Warriors and Cavs at 2 and 3 are each at $137. So the Pistons, who are out of the playoffs as of this moment, lost 8 in a row, could and should be 9 after tonight, have now the highest payroll in the National Basketball Association. And it's not going to get any leaner either. Because one of the national angle stories is to rip on the Clippers today, at least on this angle, for saying, oh yeah, we'll give you everything you want. We're going to recreate what a future jersey retirement ceremony is going to be, and you'll be a Clipper for life. 6 months later, he's been sent to Detroit. But in all that, he signed a 5-year extension. Or our new 5-year contract with the Clippers over the past summer. He got the fifth year in exchange for not having a no-trade clause. Hence why this move happened. Had he had a no-trade clause, we're talking about a whole bunch of different things today. And I'm going to take your phone calls on this over the course of especially the next hour and a half before we replay the Kyle Lawson interview. 866-240-1065. Open phones now, open phones at about 4:10, smack in the middle of that, incidentally. Fun coincidence that I happened to book him a few days ago for this. David Fernandez, our buddy from DetroitBadBoys.com, will join us to break this whole trade down. So Blake Griffin is at $29 million this year, 31, 34, 36, 38, through the 2021-2022 season. Drummond, of course, is the other player at 23. Now, at least Blake Griffin has experience playing with a true center, of which there's not many as we know in this league anymore. And quite frankly, he gets a lot of the pub, I think, because he's in L.A., but especially now that he's improved his free throw shooting, I don't see how you can make an argument that DeAndre Jordan is a better player than Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond is the better player between the two, especially now that Drummond has vastly improved his free throw shooting, which still stands at about 60, 60-something percent. In fact, let me triple-check. Andre Drummond, your free throw update, 62.5. So he at least plays with a true center, similar to DeAndre Jordan, only now he's a better free throw shooter. Harris is gone, and that one's going to hurt a little bit. He was having the best year of his career and was signed through next year at, as far as NBA levels go, a reasonable $14.8 million. Avery Bradley, don't forget, though, is a free agent after this season. And as we talked with David Fernandez and others in the last, I'd say, month or so, if you're a Pistons fan, you've been clamoring for Avery Bradley to be traded away, so you got your wish there. Boban, incidentally, will make 9.4 next year. He signed. Do you like the move? Is this the type of thing to at least get the Pistons into the playoffs? Because they're a couple games out and below 500 as of right now. But they sit in the ninth spot. And with the Knicks still being the laughable Knicks and everybody else below them, well, quite frankly, they stink. It's on the Pistons now, especially once Blake Griffin gets in there and starts getting acclimated with Stan Van Gundy, his system, and his new teammates. It's now totally on the Pistons. This is a four right now to attempt to keep taking that next step that we've been waiting for a year and a half for the Pistons to take. Because, of course, a couple years ago, they made the playoffs as the eighth seed, were swept by the Cavaliers, who were on their way to Cleveland's first championship in, well, it doesn't matter how long it was, 52 years. But they have not taken that next step. Failed to make the playoffs at all last year when guys like me said they'd be the four seed. Started off good this year. You had injuries to Reggie Jackson specifically. And they've now completely hit the skids. As mentioned, it's at eight in a row losses, with probably a ninth one coming just because of how physically shorthanded they're going to be in this game against the Cavs tonight. But now that you have Blake Griffin in tow, and eventually you'll get Reggie Jackson back, it's a thinner team. It's time for guys like the first-round draft pick, Luke Kennard, for example. You want your moment in the sun, Luke Kennard, and to a degree, Stanley Johnson, who still feels like a bust on some levels. Certainly not the star player you would want for a top 12 pick. Well, those guys, they're going to get a lot more action because now they're forced to, because guys like Bradley and Tobias Harris are gone. And Reggie Jackson's still out. But this is a win now type of move. This is Stan Van Gundy trying to make some things happen, get this team in the playoffs, take that next step. It'll probably help put a few extra butts in the seats at Little Caesars Arena, which unfortunately is already seeing a drop-off from the early season attendance. And we speculated that on this show, by the way, if you recall, that might happen once the flavor after about a month or so wears off and you look at the standings and see, well, the Pistons still aren't doing that well. Tom Gores, Pistons owner, quoted as saying, quote, "We are serious about winning, and this is a major move to improve our team. Blake Griffin is one of the NBA's elite players, and when you get an opportunity to add that kind of talent, you take it." And make no mistake about it, folks. In addition to negotiating away a no-trade clause for the fifth guaranteed year, not an option type thing. It's a straight-up normal year. It's no player option, no team option, nothing. Plus his injury issues over the years. That's why, Tom Gores, you had the opportunity to get that kind of player. Does anybody, honest to goodness, think if Blake Griffin wasn't the injury-riddled player that he's always been, that the Clippers would have, even after all they've done, would have ever made him available? I think not. And if you're the Clippers, Boban's a decent backup center. Tobias, for the rest of this year, next year will be a nice piece. Who knows what's going to happen with Avery Bradley? Technically, he can actually, if he's waived, he can actually go back to Boston if he wanted to, because now he's changed teams again. The picks will help the Clippers, too, down the line. But the Pistons are able to bring this guy in because of his injury history. And that's going to be the biggest gag, of course, as Blake Griffin as a Piston goes forward. How often can he actually keep himself on the basketball court? You know, he's been having a few issues recently, a concussion being the most recent. And, you know, here's a guy in 33 games so far this year, 22.6 points, 7.9 rebounds, 5.4 assists. More on that in a moment. So when he's on the court, he's still statistically, at the five-time All-Star is having still statistically a good season. We just know that in the last 4 years, he's been really, really hurt quite often. Of course, we know he missed his original rookie season of 09-10 with an injury, then did, for what it's worth, play 82, all 66, 80, and 80. So he was then healthy for 4 years, but he hasn't played more than 67 games since then due to the various injuries. And it sapped him in the playoffs. He exited in the playoffs. That's another reason the Clippers couldn't get out of round one last year. And by the way, on the Clippers, does anybody else find it absolutely hysterical? Because I know I do. That here we are on January 20th, 2018. And I would love to be on the fly on the wall right now at the apartment, house, whatever, of one DeAndre Jordan. I would love to be a fly on the wall just to listen to what he is saying and thinking about all this. Because remember, guys, he was about to leave the Clippers. Blake and Chris Paul, who are no longer Clippers, more or less came to Dallas to beg him to reconsider. He did, spurned Mark Cuban, which I know gets a nice jolt for a certain segment out there, myself to a degree including, just because Mark Cuban's always been a loudmouth. Everybody remembers that hysterical story from, what, 2 summers ago now? So how hysterical is it that DeAndre Jordan, you are literally left holding the bag. You are all that's still there. You know, Blake's gone. CP3's gone. Some of the other role players from a couple of those playoff teams last few years, gone. And DeAndre Jordan is the only one left. Expect the Clippers to be moving him soon, too, I would imagine. Which incidentally leads me to a second thing that I've noticed on the national people since last night. Because I'm here to tell you, it's a dumb as heck notion. The notion is, oh, now that the money is cleared, you know, watch out. It's going to be the Clippers. They'll get LeBron and Paul George, who's, you know, now an all-star because he's a Boogie Cousins injury replacement. And there'll be another injury replacement coming in the next day or so since John Wall is going to miss 2 months. That's another story. But I'm here to tell you, folks, if LeBron is going to L.A., I firmly believe this deal and the one that will most likely follow in the next few weeks involving one DeAndre Jordan is the reason that if LeBron goes to L.A., I think the Lakers are back in the driver's seat. At least you have the Lakers on the chest and a few more things going forward in place. Who knows what the heck is going to happen to the L.A. Clippers now? Well, first and foremost, the minute they start not making playoffs at all, which they're in danger of, and that's part of what also sparked this trade, like the Pistons, they are just below 500 and just outside of the playoffs in the West. You automatically go back to being the stepchild to the Lakers. And yeah, Lakers have the Lonzo, more specifically, LaVar Ball Circus. But if I'm LeBron and I really want to go to L.A., I think the Lakers just got back in the driver's seat for that one. Now, I'm not saying he's going to go there. I still am about 60-40 that he's coming back, that he's staying in Cleveland, but only 60-40. I'm just saying, if he ends up going to L.A., I'm here to tell you right now, the Lakers are back in the driver's seat as to which L.A. team he's going to go to. Because seriously, if they trade DeAndre Jordan, what, LeBron and Paul George go to the Clippers, and what the heck else do they have? The complementary pieces, I believe, would be worse than the complementary pieces currently in Cleveland or even in Oklahoma City. But yet I've heard the national people say, oh, this is going to be the coup that down the line is going to ensure that LeBron's a Clipper. What the heck are you smoking? If he's going to L.A., I'm convinced he's going to the Lakers now. Because LaVar Ball and Lonzo Ball circus aside, at least the Lakers are in the process of building something. The Clippers right now are in the process of tearing it all down. As for the Pistons, if he could stay on the court, which of course is no guarantee when talking about Blake Griffin, then now the Pistons are in a position to have a legit true star. Andre Drummond's a very, very good player and quite frankly should have been an all-star, I think, this year, with the free throw shooting improvement being the clincher for a reserve spot as an Eastern Conference All-Star. Didn't happen. I'm still bummed about it. But now you have a true, when healthy, top NBA player, recognizable player, a star to promote and get guys in, more fans in the seats maybe. But more importantly, when healthy, this team should be a little bit better than they already were. Now, that's, again, with everyone healthy. I don't mean just Blake. I mean Reggie Jackson as well. And a team that should, at the barest of minimums, make the playoffs. And that's what Stan Van Gundy is trying to do. Get them back to the playoffs so they can take that next step that we've been waiting a year and a half for the Pistons to make. I got plenty more thoughts on this. I want to hear your thoughts, too, on this Tuesday edition at 866-240-1065. We'll have some time at 410, maybe a little bit coming up here in just a bit. Kyle Austin, MLive Michigan State writer. Bob and I had a fascinating interview about the potential long-term fallout for Michigan State with this whole Nassar thing. We first talked with him this past Friday, but everything is still very, very timely. And since I'm having a Detroit/Michigan-centric day, we're going to replay that for you at about 4:30. But coming up next, we're going to break down this trade a little bit more with David Fernandez, friend of the show, one of the writers for DetroitBadBoys.com, Piston site over on SB Nation. But before we get to that and the timeout, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
So unless you've been living under a rock and just now turned on the radio and hear this program, Blake Griffin is now a Detroit Pistons. He's averaging 20 in the games he's played this season, 33 of them, averaging 22.6 points, 7.9 rebounds, and 5.4 assists. So still very good numbers when he's out there on the floor. Those numbers also mean that only Blake Griffin and Chris Webber from 2005, when he was sent from Sacramento to Philadelphia, are the only two players in NBA history to be traded mid-season while averaging 20-plus points, 7-plus rebounds, and 5-plus assists on the year. For the record, when Webber was traded from Sacramento to Philly, this was in 2005, he, at that moment of the trade, was averaging 21.3 points, 9.7 boards, and 5.5 assists. So Blake Griffin now to the Pistons, and Chris Webber, who, of course, started with the Fab Five at Michigan, the only players in NBA history to be traded midseason while averaging 20-plus points, 7-plus rebounds, and 5-plus assists in NBA history. That, my friends, is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. So much more on this trade. Your thoughts on it, and mine as well. And also, David Fernandez thought, one of the writers from DetroitBadBoys.com, Piston site on SB Nation. He's going to join me next here on this Tuesday edition of The Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin in for Bob France here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, our thinking was this. The hardest thing to do in this league is to get a proven star. And it's just very hard to do. It's hard to do in free agency. It's hard to do in trades. You get very few opportunities to do it. The guy's a five-time All-Star. Been an all-NBA guy, puts you in the top 15 guys in the league. He's only 28 years old. We know the injury history. That's the risk on it.
So there's a little bit from Stan Van Gundy speaking to reporters this morning on, of course, the mega deal that happened yesterday evening that we're all still trying to sift through. Blake Griffin is now a Detroit Piston. And there's so many different angles on this whole thing to go into. And coincidentally enough, before the trade broke, I had already decided that today was going to be the Detroit slash Michigan centric day. And I had already booked our next guest. And of course, our conversation got a lot easier once this news broke. I'm, of course, talking about a friend of the show, David Fernandez, one of the writers for DetroitBadBoys.com, Piston site over there on SB Nation. Good wild Tuesday afternoon to you, David. How you doing?
Hey, I'm you know, kind of shook right now, but I'm kind of just, you know, getting my bearings straight after all this news.
Your initial thoughts when you first heard of it this evening, because I kind of had the same thought that Blake Griffin himself tweeted with the Will Smith from Fresh Prince little image. What about you? What was your first reaction when you heard this?
I mean, first reaction was probably excitement. You know, Blake Griffin has been such a stellar player for so long in this league. You know, the first thought was excitement. And you know, there's a bunch of different avenues that I think we can go down into why I was excited. But also, you know, nervous, and especially looking at that contract. You know, it's quite the heavy deal. So, you know, I would say nervous and excited all at one time, but, you know, trying to remain optimistic, even though there's definitely some questions that remain.
Yeah, there are tons of questions, I think, that remain, and you kind of brought up one of the main ones, because let's face it, whether or not this plan works, this clearly win now type of move by Stan Van Gundy and the crew, whether this works or not is almost irrelevant to the following question slash topic on this. As you mentioned, Blake Griffin in the offseason, this past offseason, signed a 5-year, you know, max kind of extension, $175 million. He's made $29 this year. Incidentally, side note, David, I found this out earlier today. Pistons now have the highest payroll for this season in the NBA. And he gets $38 million in the final year of his deal, which is 2021-22. How handcuffed are the Detroit Pistons financially going forward? Because, well, I as a Cavs fan and follower of them the last bunch of years can tell you, Pistons, you are now in salary cap hell, just like the Cavs are.
Yeah, well, the Pistons, you know, officially for this season, I don't believe are in luxury tax just yet. They're very close. They're definitely above the cap, but they're not that luxury tax type of threshold. But you're right, you know, they're over the next 4 years, they're going to owe Blake Griffin $143 million, 2018 to 2022.
Yeah, let's put it this way before you go any farther. If options are picked up on Reggie Bullock in this case, the Pistons already have $137 committed million next year.
Yeah, they're going to be strapped. You know, this is the team that you can expect for the next few seasons, unless you're looking at additional trades. You know, you look at the guys that actually have movable contracts. That would be, you know, Langston Galloway, maybe John Lorp. He's able to get healthy and show some value. So this is the team. They're definitely going to be strapped. But one thing that you have to kind of take away from this as well is that Detroit is not a free agent destination.
Right.
Samuel Gundy said it right there in that little tidbit, and we've known this about the city of Detroit, and just in general, it's difficult for the Pistons to land those types of guys. So, you know, my mentality is that, yes, it's a hefty price to pay. It is a all-star caliber player and, you know, a top 15, top 20 type of guy. But at the same time, there's not a lot of guys that are coming knocking on your door to want to come play for the Pistons, not only because, you know, it's not as sexy as a city as like Miami and Los Angeles, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, it hasn't been a winning city either. You know, guys want to win in this league. So it's not necessarily been one where they're going to go there just for the winning either. So, you know, it's not that they're necessarily strapping themselves from signing Paul George or signing Anthony Davis in the future, because those guys probably weren't going to come to Detroit anyways.
We're talking with David Fernandez over there at DetroitBadBoys.com, breaking down this mega deal that the Pistons made yesterday evening, bringing Blake Griffin in. Before we get to some of the how this is going to work out lineup-wise and all that stuff, obviously they're going to be shorthanded tonight. I've already stated, David, that if my Cavs lose this one, because let's face it, at least for this singular night, it's Andre Drummond and a bunch of role players, I'm going to be spending most of tomorrow's show just pointing fingers at the Cavs, because there's no excuse for losing losing this one. It's just for the Pistons, it's a sad reality for tonight that they're going to be that shorthanded. In theory, Blake will make his debut either on Thursday against the Grizzlies or on Saturday against the Heat. But let's talk about the two guys that are now gone. Avery Bradley, first and foremost. Anybody who's anybody in and around the Pistons, and specifically Pistons fans, have been kind of wanting this guy who's a free agent at the end of the year to be traded away anyway. Well, good job, guys. You got your wish. But Tobias Harris, on the other hand, who is making $16 million this year and only $14.8 million next year, is having the best season of his career. How big is it going to be to lose those two guys? And I guess you can include Boban, the big man, off the bench.
So I guess we'll start with Bradley. I don't think it's going to be that big of a loss this season. And then you look at next season as well. I don't think Detroit was going to re-sign him after it was all said and done. Most likely, even with the Blake Griffin acquisition, it'll be pretty difficult for the Pistons to make it to the playoffs. So I don't see, you know, them bringing him back, especially, you know, he started off the season really well. But then you look at the months of January and December, where his scoring dropped by roughly 3 points per game. His shooting percentage plummeted. He was a 40% three-point shooter to begin the season. It dropped to 32% for the month of January, and only 38% from the floor, while 2.2 turnovers per night. So he hasn't been playing well, and he hasn't necessarily looked like a kind of guy that was going to net a $20 million contract, at least from Detroit, following this season. So I'm happy that the Pistons were able to ship him out the door and net something, and that something happens to be Blake Griffin. Now, you did mention Tobias Harris. That is a guy that is young. He has improved each season. He's averaging 18 points per game, 5 rebounds per game this season. But at the same time, he's the type of guy where you have to be a little concerned. Did he reach his ceiling? Is this the best that you're going to get? And if so, after next season, do you really want to commit $120 million to a guy like Tobias Harris? Because that's what he's going to be netting in the free agency market.
Your thoughts on all the pieces that the Pistons had to send. Did they overpay for a guy who, despite his skill, which is very, very good, there's a reason he's a five-time All-Star, a guy who's at this moment averaging 22.6, 7.9, 5.4 for your points, rebounds, and assists, but of course he all has his injury issues. Did they give up too much? I'm also including the first-round draft pick, which if you hear, guys, that it's protected, don't let that fool you. It's only 1 through 4 protected. I'm 90% sure it's going to convey to the Clippers this upcoming June's draft here in 2018. Do you think the Pistons overpaid in this deal?
It's hard for me to say whether or not they overpaid right now. I want to lean by saying no. Strictly because of what I just said, I don't think that Avery Bradley was going to be coming back to this season no matter what. I'm looking at this trade more so, and this might be the incorrect way to view this trade, but I'm looking at this trade essentially like you pretty much shipped off Boban, who was just a waste of cap space, and he didn't necessarily help this team. Mm-hmm. So you're not paying him next season $7 million, which he's due. You are, you did trade away Tobias Harris and a first and second round pick for Blake Griffin. Yes, you did move Avery Bradley, but he's an unrestricted free agent after this year, so who knows what he's going to be doing in LA or, after he was here in Detroit. So I'm looking at more so Tobias Harris, a first round pick and a second round pick from guys that you could see being Pistons moving forward for Blake Griffin. No, I don't think that they did, I don't think that they over, or that they, sent out too much for Blake Griffin. It's just more so what is Blake Griffin going to look like once he plays basketball in Detroit? Is there going to be any nagging injuries that are going to really sideline him, which would make them obviously losers at this trade, if that is the case?
And one has to assume that that will happen just because that's been the track record of Blake Griffin for the last four and a half years. It is what it is. Dude has not been able to stay on the court enough, especially in the most crunch of times. He's had injury issues during the Clippers playoff series the last couple years, as well. So obviously that is going to be a factor. Of course, those injuries are a part of the reason that even while they're clearly tearing everything down, and I fully expect we'll hear a DeAndre Jordan trade. And how funny, by the way, is that, considering what he almost did with Dallas, and now he's the only one there, by the way. I'm cracking myself up today over that part of it. But if he get, if he can stay healthy, I think he'll obviously be able to continue putting up these kind of numbers. In addition, if he can stay healthy, David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com joining us here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kushlin in for Bob France here on this Tuesday. If he can stay healthy, one notation I've heard from some people since yesterday that I don't think is that far off base is, look, now he's not in L.A., with all the other things that were going on with that Clippers team and Doc and being in L.A. and yada, yada, yada. Now he's in Detroit. And if he can stay healthy, which unfortunately is a big if with this guy, if he can stay healthy, he'll have no choice but to focus solely on his game, thereby making himself a little bit better. He's not just the dunker, for example, that he was a couple years ago. He's getting a little better in other aspects of a game that you want a 6'10 guy to have. Do you buy any of that?
I do. I mean, I think that Blake Griffin, you mentioned it right there. He's been growing his game for as long as we've seen him in this league. This season alone, he's added the three-point shot. Not that he's a downtown sniper by any means, but he's averaging 5.7 attempts per game, and he's shooting 34%, which is right around league average. Before, I think his highest in attempts was like 1.9 attempts per game. So we've seen Blake Griffin take small steps to add to his game each season. And, you know, Blake Griffin, everyone knows about him. He's a guy that likes the entertainment business. He was a guy that you might have seen on, you know, doing some stand-up comedy. You'd see him in commercials all over the place. That's not going to be available in Detroit. You know, Detroit is not an advertising and marketing hub. So yes, I think that there is definitely some truth into that, just strictly because it is where you live for the most of the season. And yeah, you can, you know, go and live in LA when it's your off season and go do what you got to do down there. But, during the off season, it's going to be basketball. And, you know, I think that that's something that'll be good for Griffin, and, you know, hopefully it's something where he can really concentrate on his health, really concentrate on his body, really concentrate on his game, and that will be huge for Detroit if that is the case.
You know, speaking of that entertainment kind of stuff, the only thing on this end of it, now that he's a Piston, and what I'm about to say is no knock on Andre Drummond. I still feel he's one of the bigger snubs from the All-Star game for this year, particularly because of his improved free throw shooting. In fact, dare I say, because of that improved free throw shooting, Blake Griffin is coming to a team that has a DeAndre Jordan-like player, except this guy's better, in my opinion, and the deciding factor is now the free throws, Drummond being better than DeAndre Jordan. But the fact of the matter is Blake Griffin is still a five-time All-Star, four-time All-NBA guy. So from a Piston standpoint, he's certainly a guy you can market on your end. It's not going to be as glamorous as, obviously, things he could get in L.A., but at least from the Piston standpoint, when he's healthy again, you have a bona fide, legitimate star on your team that, no knock to Andre Drummond or even Reggie Jackson, you didn't have before.
Yeah, he's the franchise guy, and I think that's going to be pretty clear here within the next, you know, I guess, come next season, you know, we will definitely be seeing Blake Griffin as that franchise guy. And that's, you know, I think that that's good for the city of Detroit. I think that that's good for Little Caesars Arena and getting more people in the seats there. They haven't had this level of a free agent, not a free agent, of a guy that's coming to their team in their, like, biological prime in as long as I can possibly think about it.
And that's sadly true, if I may cut you off real quick. That's sadly true, because even when they were going to all those East Finals, two NBA Finals, and a championship, as we all know, that was like the textbook definition of team. There wasn't a superstar on that team. You could almost argue the last true big-time superstar that the Pistons had was Isaiah Thomas. Because I don't count Grant Hill. I'm sorry, I don't.
Yeah, and they haven't really had a guy when it comes to, like, you go get me a bucket, you're the kind of guy that's going to put up, you know, however many points, you can take over a game, really, since Jerry Stackhouse. You know, you look at the teams that followed them, like you said, they were the definition of what team basketball was, and that was great. That was, you know, I would take that right now if you could promise me, you know, six Eastern Conference Finals appearances in a row. But you know, this is a big move for Detroit. This is something that I think, you know, who knows, down the road it could be something that could be important. Let's say, you know, cap space open up somehow and you can actually bring in another guy. Now that's projecting. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is something that's huge for Detroit, because they haven't had that, and you know, I'm excited. It's honestly almost like a foreign concept to me to see someone this large, this looming, entering this team and now going to be the primary go-to guy.
We're talking with David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com, the Piston site over there on SB Nation. Obviously talking about the huge Blake Griffin deal. Unfortunately, Pistons fans, he will not make his debut against LeBron and the Cavs tonight. It'll either be Thursday against the Grizzlies or Saturday against the Heat. So, unfortunately, Pistons fans, tonight it's Andre Drummond and a few role players. Best of luck against the Cavs team that's trying to play better. Side note, if you're you Cavs, you lose this game, I'm spending all show tomorrow bad-mouthing you because you have no reason to do that. Let's get to some of the a little nitty-gritty here, if I may. We know, obviously, Reggie Jackson's out and will remain out for a little while longer, so Ish Smith is still the starting point guard. But you bring a Blake Griffin in, but you're out of Tobias Harrison and Avery Bradley. Break down how you think the starting lineup and main rotation for Stan Van Gundy is going to look now.
Honestly, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing a starting rotation of, you know, you put Langston Galloway, who we did see get a start a couple of games ago, as a starting point guard, just because he's the kind of guy that can actually space the floor out for you a little bit. He's got a three-point shot. You look at Luke Kennard, he's been playing so well over the past 15 games or so. He's up to 9 points per game in limited minutes. He's shooting 47% from the floor and 47% from three, another guy that can space the floor. Now you have a guy in Blake Griffin who can actually play make, who can actually bring up the ball every now and then as well. So I don't think that you necessarily need the prototypical point guard like Reggie Jackson or, you know, even Ish Smith at that point to be the starter right now. I think that that's something where obviously you let Reggie Jackson heal. When he comes back, he comes back. But I wouldn't mind seeing Langston Galloway being in that starting unit. And then alongside, you know, Reggie Bullock starting at the three, just because you really need to let Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond have as much space as possible down low, so that they can do what they can do best. I'm really interested to see what does this mean for Andre Drummond, who's been playing that sort of hub role where the ball goes through him. He's been finding guys. He's up to four assists a game. Blake Griffin is a better passer than Andre Drummond. Blake Griffin has averaged, I think, around five assists this season and mm-hmm. has been around that mark.
Yeah, he's at 5.4 right now.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm almost interested to see how do they sort of allocate who's the big man that's making the passing plays moving forward? Are they going to take Andre Drummond away from the top of the key, like where he's been all season? Because that's been really great for Andre's game. So I'm not necessarily sure how that's all going to work out. Rotation-wise, Ish Smith, he's better off the bench. He's better with the freelance type of offense. Mm-hmm. He's better with those types of players. So, you know, I don't necessarily know. I think you're going to see a lot of staggering like we saw last season.
Something I've been reading about since last night, and whether they're starters or off the bench, either way, their minutes have just vastly increased. And the theme of what I was reading in this regard, multiple people writing about this, the time for very quick growing up for third-year man Stanley Johnson and rookie Luke Kennard is now. Is that true?
Definitely true. I mean, this team is going to rely, especially if you're looking at this season, like, hey, we're not out of this playoff push. This is something that's realistic. You still have the whole, you know, third of the season to go following the All-Star break. They need Stanley Johnson to continue to improve. He has been playing a little bit better since coming back on this last stint around from the hip flexor injury. So, Luke Kennard, he's been playing out of his mind. I don't know if you can ask him to do too much more other than minutes production, and hopefully he doesn't drop in his productivity. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that you can kind of try. You might as well with Luke Kennard. He's playing so well so far this season. Stanley Johnson, it's really going to be on him to be able to kind of find his role within this team. And that's not just be a great defender, being able to contribute a little bit more on the offensive side.
Last question before I let you go. David Fernandez, thanks so much as always for the time. David Fernandez at DetroitBadBoys.com, Pistons site on SB Nation. We're breaking down the Blake Griffin to Detroit deal. For those who can't remember, it's Blake Griffin along with Bryce Johnson, Willie Reed to the Pistons, Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris, Boban Marjanovic, 2019 second rounder and a protected 2018 first rounder, but it's only 1 through 4 protected, so I'm pretty sure it'll convey this year. That's the full length of the deal. And the final question is a more broad one. I feel that with this type of move, As I look at the standings as of this moment, Pistons are 4 games below .500, 2.5 behind the Sixers for the final playoff spot. Everybody else below them is pretty much out of it, including the Knicks. But with this move now being made, Stan Van Gundy is clearly staking his Detroit career to this move. I don't think there's any arguing about that. How imperative is it, though, David, that they somehow, starting with this year, turn this around and at minimum make the playoffs? I know last year when the Pelicans acquired Boogie Cousins to go with Anthony Davis, it did not work out. They did not go to the playoffs. They're looking like they will this year, though, and of course Boogie's hurt now, by the by. But how imperative is it for not just Stan Van Gundy and his future as in his spot with the Pistons, but the team in general, now that they have Blake Griffin, and in theory, unless they trade him away, will have him for 4 more years after this one? How imperative is it that now this year turns into, at minimum, a playoff appearance?
I mean, it's going to be difficult, I think. I think that this move sealed Stan Van Gundy for next season, and he's going to live out that contract. I think that the fact that they are, you know, 4 games back in the loss column is really going to hurt them. So it's kind of hard for me to tell if it's going to be imperative. I think that no matter what, he'll be back next season. Now, trust me, no one would want to see this team in the playoffs more than me and all the guys over at Detroit Bad Boys. But I don't think that it's going to be imperative, just knowing when this move happened, and also when you look at you know, where they're at in the standings and what they have coming up on their, you know, they've had the Cavs. So this will be probably their 9th straight loss. So I think they understand that it's going to take some time to get in flowing with the team.
David Fernandez, we always enjoy our chats, and boy, did we have a lot to chat about today, that's for sure, with Blake Griffin, the Pistons acquiring him via trade. Always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. So sorry that we won't get to see him tonight, but either Thursday or Saturday, he'll be making his Pistons debut. I know I will be tuning in just to see how it starts working out. We'll certainly catch up with you in very short order to get some initial recaps in maybe a week or so. How's that sound?
Sounds perfect. Talk to you soon, James.
That is David Fernandez, one of the writers, DetroitBadBoys.com, Pistons site over on SB Nation. And, hey, as we head into a quick timeout for a top of the hour and all the things that come with it, your phone calls, by the way, next, replay of Kyle Austin of M Live on the whole Michigan State Nassar fallout at about 4:30. I got something fun for you guys. If you are caller number 5 right now to 866-240-1065, I will hook you up with a pair of tickets to the upcoming Toledo Golf Show. It's at the Tam O'Shanter Exhibition Hall, Friday, February 16th, Saturday, February 17th, and Sunday, February 18th. Caller number 5 right now, 866-240-1065. We'll send you to the golf show. Your calls in the Blake Griffin trade and Kyle Austin coming up in hour number 2 next here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, our thinking was this. The hardest thing to do in this league is to get a proven start. And it's just very hard to do. It's hard to do in free agency. It's hard to do in trades. You get very few opportunities to do it. The guy's a 5-time All-Star. He's been an All-NBA guy, puts you in the top 15 guys in the league. He's only 28 years old. We know the injury history. That's the risk on it. That risk was worth it because of the talent that we're bringing back. We're not in a situation where we can be that choosy, and we can't necessarily go and try to do it the same way as everybody else. We're going to be different. Yeah, our money and our talent is in our big guys and in Reggie when we get him back. We don't have him, obviously, tonight and Thursday's questionable.
They haven't had that kind of veteran, grown-up superstar. They can't get a Blake Griffin in free agency, and they haven't drafted one. They saw an opportunity in Detroit to get a star, and don't underestimate the importance of Blake Griffin as a ticket seller. This is an all-in move for Stan Van Gundy and their regime. They've got to get in the playoffs, and they've got to show some progress here. The Pistons, they've really been in a free fall, almost out of the Eastern Conference playoff, the top 8, and they were motivated to get a deal done. And the Clippers didn't know whether they would trade Blake Griffin if the right deal would come along. They certainly had been very focused on DeAndre Jordan, Lou Williams, but this was a deal for them that made sense, and both sides wanted to move fast on it.
I talked to Jeff Bauer, the Pistons GM, tonight, and you know, they like the idea that he played with a big center in DeAndre Jordan for several years to be able to figure out how to play with Drummond. They certainly think it can work. They need his veteran presence, and they need a superstar in Detroit, and he gives them that. They can't get that player in free agency, and they have a brand-new arena in downtown that's empty. They hope he can sell some tickets. They want to reshape that franchise without bottoming out. And that's why getting back in this deal two starters and Harris and Bradley, but also getting that first-round draft pick, likely it'll be in 2018, the Pistons pick. And now they have DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams, who they also hope they can get first-round picks for. Now you have a chance to have multiple first-round picks here in the next couple of years to start reshaping this team that was certainly very top-heavy with that $170 million-plus they would have owed Griffin over the next 5 years.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are for hour number two of this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Kuslin hanging out with you today and tomorrow. Bob is out. He'll be back on Thursday. And I've a lot of the 2 days, I wanted to have a kind of a Detroit slash Michigan centric day and Cleveland slash Ohio centric day. We got a couple of Cavs and other guests for tomorrow. But how appropriate that I chose today, ahead of time, I swear to you, to be the Detroit slash Michigan centric day. Because as we've been talking all afternoon, right now the phone lines are open once again at 866-240-1065. Big story of the day, of course, today. Blake Griffin is a Detroit Piston as he was sent from the Clippers to the Pistons yesterday evening. The full layout of the trade once again is thus. To the Pistons are Blake Griffin, Bryce Johnson, and Willie Reed. Incidentally, you won't see much of either of the two of them. I've already heard that Reed is going to be down in the G League. To the Clippers goes Avery Bradley and his expiring contract. Tobias Harris, who has one more year on his. The two more years on Boban Marjanovic. And then a couple of draft picks, a 2019 second rounder going to the Clippers. And most importantly, a 2018 first round protected pick. But I use the term protected very loosely because it's only 1 through 4 protected is that Pistons pick for 2018, 19, and 20. It's unprotected in 21. But I'm here to tell you right now, it will never get that far because only being 1 through 4 protected means I'm 90 to 95% sure that that pick will convey to the Clippers this coming draft in June. So it was a big price for a big star. And yes, Blake Griffin still is a big star. His biggest problem, of course, is he just can't keep himself on the basketball court. 866-240-1065. My final question last segment to David Fernandez, our good buddy from DetroitBadBoys.com. Another random coincidence that I happen to schedule him ahead of time for this to be the Detroit Michigan day, and we get this news last night, which more or less did all my show prep for me. I do disagree with his answer to one of my final questions. Not the part about how this move, whether we want it or not, will solidify Stan Van Gundy in his current position through the end of his contract, which ends next year. That I agree with. Because if you're Tom Gores and the rest of the Pistons brass, well, yeah, you just had Stan Van go out and trade for an actual star. So you're going to let him play out his contract as head coach and de facto GM. I say the fact that he's not technically a GM, he's president of basketball operations, and there is a GM. But at the end of the day, we know Stan Van Gundy is the one making the calls. I do agree with that part of it, that it does mean that Stan Van Gundy, whether we want him to or not, will be the Pistons' head coach and president of basketball operations through the end of next season when his contract runs out. We will not be hearing any news this season or this offseason about Stan Van being fired just because he went out and made this move. And now if you're the Pistons, you have to live with it and you have to let it see how it progresses. The part that I disagree with him on is when I asked him how David Fernandez, from last segment, he writes, of course, for DetroitBadBoys.com, SB Nation site for the Pistons. When I asked him how imperative it was that the Pistons make the playoffs starting with this year, they're under 500, they're 4 games under 500, 2.5 out of the final playoff spot, they're in 9th. And the way the Eastern Conference, incidentally, is shaping up at this moment, below the Pistons are the Knicks, Hornets, and down the line. In other words, Knicks, Hornets, Bulls, Nets, Hawks, Magic, I fully and firmly believe all 6 of those teams are done. They're out. They're not going to be doing anything. The Pistons are only 2.5 behind an improving Sixers team. And you got the Pacers and Wizards and Bucks and Heat and such ahead of them. Then you get to the top three. I disagree, though. I feel it is absolutely imperative. That's why I phrased the question that way. That Detroit, now going through the rest of this season, again, they're 22-26 at the moment, have lost 8 in a row, and sadly, Pistons fan, I'm sorry to say, will and should be 9 after tonight because it's LeBron and the Cavs coming to Little Caesars Arena. And it's less about the Cavs and LeBron and more about the fact that for at least this singular night, the Pistons will be trotting out Andre Drummond and a bunch of role players because Reggie Jackson's hurt. Blake Griffin will not make his debut tonight. Stan Van has already announced that. He'll either make his debut, incidentally, Thursday or on Saturday against the Grizzlies or Heat, respectively. But obviously, because of the trade, there's no Avery Bradley or Tobias Harris for this game either. So it sadly will be a 9-game losing streak, most likely, after tonight. But I do believe it is very imperative that the Pistons, once they especially get healthy, and start getting Blake acclimated starting, I hope, Thursday. I hope after tonight and a practice tomorrow, they say, you know what, we're gonna bring him out there on Thursday. I hope they don't wait till Saturday. That's just me. That's because the Pistons are in a funk right now and a couple games out of the final playoff spot, so the ground needs to be start to made up now. The problem is, I do believe it's imperative that they turn this around enough to squeak out a playoff spot. I absolutely do. Yes, I know there's precedent. Last year, the Pelicans traded for Boogie Cousins, if you recall, right around this time. They were still not able to make the playoffs, even though most everyone, myself included, said, aha, that's probably the coup that'll get them the 8th spot and the right to get clobbered by the Warriors. Didn't happen. And now, of course, the Pelicans have their own question side note to answer because Boogie's out with a torn ACL. But I do think it's imperative that the Pistons turn this around, especially when they get Blake into the lineup and then eventually get Reggie Jackson back, that they do turn this into a playoff team. Because it'll show the progress. It'll show that, okay, give me Blake Griffin and these guys healthy for a full season and hopefully Blake healthy for the majority of it. And not only are we definitely making the playoffs, but in an East that may or may not have LeBron still in it, we could make some noise. That's what this move is about long term. And mind you, there is a long term here because Blake Griffin is signed for 4 more years between $29 and $38 million a season after this year because he signed a 5-year new contract with the Clippers this past June or July, I should say. And then 6 months later, he shipped off to Detroit. But I do believe you have to start showing those signs immediately. We don't want a whole summer of thinking, oh my goodness, yeah, you went out and traded Blake Griffin for some of the only halfway decent pieces you still had left, and it's still not a playoff team. And then you got to worry about playing Blake all this much money for his injury history. And oh, by the way, because of the money now tied up in Griffin, the Pistons are now formally starting this offseason, the Pistons are going to formally enter the spot where the Cavs have been these last couple years. That is salary cap hell. In fact, I've already seen some projections that say, minusing Bradley, Harris, and Boban's contracts, but adding Blake Griffin's. And survey says Pistons have the top payroll in all the NBA as of this moment. That's right, their payroll is even higher than the Cavs and the Warriors. And all that money's tied up, so even though Detroit may not be a free agent destination, there's no chance of any actual free agents now because all that money is tied up. So yeah, when you get Blake on the floor and you get Reggie Jackson back, the dividends, I believe, need to be paid out soon. And to start, that means the Pistons, at minimum, making up the 2.5 games they're behind the Sixers right now, and making it to the playoffs. For what it's worth, that bottom part of the Eastern Conference playoffs right now is jumbled and close enough that they're 2.5 behind the Sixers for 8, but they're only 4.5 behind the Bucks for 5th. Bucks, Wizards, and Pacers all have identical records in 8 games out of first right now. But I do believe that this now needs to turn into a playoff team, and it needs to start now. Because you don't want to have to be asking these questions, and then the follow-ups about how much money is now tied up into salaries and contracts, which it is, into this offseason without a playoff appearance this season to show for it. Yeah, the outlook will also certainly be different when we restart in October with a fresh slate that hopefully involves a healthy, for the vast majority of the season, Blake Griffin. You know, next year's team, regardless of what LeBron does this offseason, next year's Piston team better be not just in the playoffs, but capable of winning at least a series or more. Period, end of story. But I do believe it has to start with a playoff appearance for this year, because you went out, you took the risk. And Sam Van Gundy said, you know, his injury history, that's the risk here. And he's absolutely right. Dude has not been able to keep himself on the court for a full season in, now counting this year, 5 years. So you kind of almost mentally assume that there's going to be blocks of time where he's just going to be hurt, because that's how Blake Griffin has rolled these last few years. But when he's on the floor, just judging by his numbers on the season right now, 22.6, 7.9, 5.4, dude can still ball. And he's more than just a dunker like he was in the first year or two of his career. I mean, he has 5.4 assists, for goodness sake. So he has talent. We know that. He's a bona fide star. We know that. But now that the Pistons have went ahead and pulled this trigger, they have to be able to cash it in, I believe, starting right now. And what that means, again, is at the barest of minimums for this season, making up the 2.5 games, they are currently out of a playoff spot. Yeah, I personally really believe it is imperative that the Detroit Pistons turn this in to at least a playoff appearance this year, and then we'll see where it starts fresh next year. Though, again, I do agree with David Fernandez that due to this deal, there are any thoughts of maybe Stan Van Gundy, it's his time is done. We can, for better or worse, nip that in the bud. He is not going anywhere until at least his contract runs out, Stan Van Gundy's, at the end of next season. This trade is the reason for that. We're going to have a lot more in this, obviously, over the coming days as well. But since I wanted to have a Detroit/Michigan-centric day, I'm going to do something a little different next segment after we get our quick timeout for a check of traffic, weather, and Sports Center update. This past Friday, so only a couple days ago, and all of it is still very timely, we sat down, Bob and I had a great conversation with Kyle Austin. He's the Michigan State beat writer for MLive.com, about the down-the-line fallout that this whole Nassar thing is going to have on Michigan State. You've been hearing people crowing about it all weekend, that something should happen to D'Antoni and Izzo as well. I'm not on board necessarily with that, but heads are continuing to roll. Michigan State and the state of Michigan just announced an interim president of the university today. And more on that is obviously going to still trickle out as the days and weeks go forward. So still a very timely chat we had with Kyle Austin of MLive.com, Michigan State beat writer. We're going to replay that for you next here on this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin in for Bob France, ESPN 106.5.
As promised on the Extravaganza, and once again, thanks so much for joining us on this free-for-all Friday. We want to talk a little bit about one of the most uncomfortable sports-related stories that we have seen in a long time, and clearly I think the parallel, if there is a parallel, is the Jerry Sandusky and Penn State scandal from a few years ago, one of the most sickening things we've all ever had to report on or discuss or talk about. And now we see almost a companion story to that at Michigan State, involving two massive organizations, one being Michigan State University and the other one, of course, being USA Gymnastics. The Dr. Larry Nassar scandal, up to 175 years in prison for his sexual abuse of countless numbers of young gymnasts. And joining us now to talk about Dr. Larry Nassar's role in all of this, which of course as the perpetrator, but also the role of prominent Michigan State executives and administrators in this as the enablers of the perpetrator. And Kyle Austin, of course, is the Michigan State writer for MLive.com. He joins us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Kyle, thanks for the time this afternoon. How are you?
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Kyle, are you how are you handling this, covering a story like this, you know, for MLive? This is, you know, obviously most of us covered in a from the periphery, from well outside of State College, Pennsylvania, what happened there. You're in the middle of this there, you know, you're in East Lansing, and you're covering this very closely. It's stomach turning. How are you handling that?
You know, I think the most emotional thing, I think for everybody, was some of the victim impact statements made in court last week and this week. I wasn't present for those. My focus is more on the athletics. But I think that was the thing that was really difficult for a lot of people. Obviously, first and foremost, for the women and the young women who made those statements. And, you know, just a lot of emotion involved for everybody. And so it's been pretty difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. And no matter what your angle you're taking on covering this, as you pointed out, listening to the impact statements or even just seeing a cursory coverage of those on TV like we are, you know, it's stomach turning, as I say. It's just disgusting. So let's get to some of the current news at hand, and then we'll try to evaluate this as we go. We all know now there have been two prominent administrators who have resigned their positions at Michigan State as part of the fallout over this. The most recent now is Athletic Director Mark Hollis announcing earlier this morning that he is leaving his position. He said, quote, "I've always been in a Spartan and always will be. It's been an absolute honor to lead this athletic department for the past decade, and I am not running away. I am running toward something." What's he running toward, and what is your reaction to Hollis being the second prominent administrator following the school president out the door?
Well, I think, first of all, Mark Hollis announcing his resignation, I think, came as more of a surprise to most people. I think a lot. I mean, certainly there were a lot of public calls for President Lorena K. Simon to resign. That happened on Wednesday, and I think that's something that a lot of people expected given the amount of scrutiny she was under. Mark Hollis, I think, surprised a few more people because, you know, despite his title of athletic director, he really wasn't made aware of any of the allegations regarding Dr. Larry Nassar before 2016, which is when the Indianapolis Star story came up and the rest of the world learned about it as well. You know, he had you know, multiple reports had been made to coaches and trainers, some before his tenure, and there were university and police investigations into his conduct in recent years. But according to him, he was not made privy to any of that due to some privacy laws. So he first found out when they did. So he doesn't. And, you know, as far as his response, you know, he suspended the gymnastics coach who had failed to report some things. Mm-hmm. And that's really all that he had. So he really didn't have, he wasn't really quite as wrapped up in this as a lot as Lorena K. Simon or a lot of the other ones. But, you know, since that, pretty much right after we talked to him, there was a subsequent report out from ESPN detailing some more troubling allegations made outside of Larry Nassar, but, you know, involving Michigan State athletes during his tenure, some previously unreported assaults, some previously unreported sexual assaults. So kind of another issue for him. So I think a lot of things had been building up, and he decided it was time to move on.
Follow-up on what I just asked you about the running toward part. I mean, that was a line that you quoted him in your piece for MLive.com. He said he's not running away from anything. He's running toward something. What does he mean by that, or what do you take his meaning to be on that? And then second of all, I get everything you just said. If he was not made aware of these things, he certainly can't be held responsible for them, I don't believe. Why would he choose to, as you just said, move on, though? I mean, I feel as though anybody who resigns from the university or certainly from USA Gymnastics, and many resignations are warranted, clearly. In fact, much more punishments for allowing or enabling or turning a blind eye to these kinds of abuses. All of that is real. But I feel like anybody who resigns is essentially saying, yeah, I dropped the ball too. I got to get out. If he really, truly wasn't aware of anything, I feel like I would want to stay and say, I want to hold people accountable for this. I'm not one of them.
Right. You know, and that was a lot of our questions this morning because, as you say, he really hadn't been implicated in the way that a lot of other administrators at the school had. You know, as far as running towards something, I think he, you know, he says he wants to run towards his future, you know, whatever that may hold. But I think the kind of the more poignant for me part of that quote is I'm not running away from anything. I think he wanted to make it clear that he, He was not pressured to resign. He was not asked to resign. He was not forced to resign. He wanted to make that clear. So I think his intention is that to make is to say, I'm not running away from anything. You know, it's not like this problem showed up at my doorstep, and I'm trying to escape scrutiny or anything like that. So I think that's where he was going with that. And then, you know, as far as his reasons, you know, we asked him at the very end, you know, why not stay on? And he said, because I like this university. I love this university. So I think whatever the facts are, you know, sometimes image can become more important. And, you know, despite the fact that he didn't receive these reports, you know, his title as athletic director, while this goes on, I think he knew that would put him towards further scrutiny. I think, you know, he was closer to retirement anyway, so I think he saw this as a good time to kind of step away, give the athletic department a fresh start, you know, image-wise, and then step away towards the retirement that I think he was moving towards anyway.
We're talking to Kyle Austin of MLive.com about a story that I've really been reticent to discuss for most of the week, even though we had the sentencing of Dr. Larry Nassar a couple of days ago. A shocked courtroom listened as the judge read portions of his six-page letter to her talking about how wrong it was for him to have to sit there and listen to all of these impact statements. It was really one of the most surreal things you've seen, and it's there's a heavy toll being taken on the Michigan State community and obviously USA Gymnastics. How would you compare, as I kind of said at the top of our conversation, Kyle, how would you compare this scandal to what we all observed and watched and really continue to some extent as people try to fight for the legacy of Joe Paterno and everything else with what happened at Penn State?
You know, I think there's a lot of similarities and some key differences. Similarities obviously being that, you know, a person involved in athletics, using that position in athletics and that the access to young people that position provides, to carry out, you know, sexual assaults on a wide scale. I think some of the differences, for one, Larry Nassar's abuse, from everything we know, is actually far wider than Jerry Sandusky. I don't remember the actual number of accusers of Jerry Sandusky, but I remember it being pretty significantly smaller than this. So I think you can make an argument that this is a bigger scandal. But I think another key difference is, you know, until this week, I think the victim impact statements changed this to a certain degree. But to this week, until this past week, this story was largely a local one. I didn't feel like it got a whole lot of play in the national media. I didn't think it was really part of the national conversation, you know, and I think that has to do with the fact that, you know, Jerry Sandusky and Penn State, that had to do with a storied football program and, you know, eventually brought down the winningest coach in college football history. So that obviously exploded into a huge national story. And this one, I think, kind of stayed under the radar a little bit because it didn't involve marquee sports. But I think that did change in the last week when you saw, you know, gold medal gymnasts come forward. You saw a lot of the emotional testimony on TV that I think kind of grabbed some people's attention. And then I think we found out, you know, the true depth of it, which I think grabbed some people. So I think there's some ones there. And then, you know, the other kind of difference I'd point out is I think certainly there's some Michigan State made some missteps, but I think the, you know, the ones at Penn State, where you talk about administrators going to jail, where you talk about, you know, coaches who knew and reported it to athletic directors and then not made to campus police, I think the scale of a cover-up was a little bit larger, and we could still find out more from Michigan State. The story's not closed. But as far as what we know now, I think while Michigan State certainly had its issues as far as how it addressed this, I think the scale of the cover-up it was larger at Penn State than it is here.
Do you think it was harder, possibly, to report on this one? Because, you know, you just laid out some similarities and differences. The one big difference to me is this guy's a doctor. And for all intents and purposes, a doctor doing an examination and then being accused of crossing the line or doing examinations that are not inappropriate are probably harder to prove or to report on, or maybe even for the girls to file a complaint or whatever, than a coach being in a shower with a young boy, Camper, who's not supposed to be examining a boy in any way, shape, or form, let alone while he's nude,
right,
and in a shower, taking advantage of it. I feel like the shock value is a lot higher with what happened at Penn State simply because there's no there's no circumstance that would ever make that okay, where a doctor examining a female patient, that happens. That is a circumstance. It's obviously what he did during those exams that make this, of course, you know, criminal, illegal, horrendous, and stomach-turning.
You're right, and I think that's a good point. And frankly, I think that's part of the reason it took so long to bring him to justice is that
right.
You know, Larry Nassar kind of had a built-in cover for his in his job. I mean, his job involved putting his hands on young girls putting his hands. You know, sometimes you know trainers put their hands into sensitive areas.
Certainly.
So I think that that's how he was able to, over so many years, whenever an allegation came up, to defend it as legitimate medical practice, and, you know, people weren't willing to really look farther. I mean, they took him at his word so often, which is kind of the fatal flaw in all of this. But, yeah, I mean, you talk about that. There's certainly a gray area there that he was able to act like he was in when he really wasn't, I think is the way to put it. Whereas certainly with Jerry Sandusky, you're right, there is no gray area. What he did certainly does not fall under any professional responsibility of his. So, yeah, I think that's probably an important distinction to make here.
We're talking about the horrific Dr. Larry Nassar scandal that has resulted in so much shame and embarrassment and, quite frankly, not nearly enough. I don't think there's anything that could be considered too harsh when you talk about anybody at USA Gymnastics who allowed this to continue and anybody at Michigan State who allowed Dr. Larry Nassar to continue. The latest fallout is athletic director, if you just turn on the radio, Mark Hollis at Michigan State has resigned. This after, of course, the school president resigned, President Simon, earlier this week. Kyle, Jim Cushlin has a question for you on this, Jim.
And one of the things that, guys, that I'm looking at when it comes to this is not so much the horrendous things that we've already heard about, but what happens now? We've already seen, as you guys have been mentioning, the first couple of shoes drop in terms of high-profile names stepping down from their positions, university president, Mark Hollis, the AD. But part of this is that the NCAA is also going to be bringing in some investigations into this that could result in, you know, athletic sanctions or probations or whatever. And there are some that are out there that feel that's still not going far enough. Like Molly Karam from our top of the hour opening montage, who said Michigan State should get the death penalty. I don't think it should go that far, but as we go forward, how much should Michigan State worry about, from an athletic perspective, the investigation part from the NCAA?
You know, that's an interesting question because there are a lot of people who would argue that while the conduct that happened on this campus was certainly reprehensible, you know, legal experts will say it's really not clear that the NCAA bylaws address that. And I think it's one of the issues you saw in the NCAA investigation and sanctions of Penn State, when that was really the first time that they had taken on a case that, you know, was really kind of outside their normal realm. They took on a case that, you know, was high-profile, criminal case, but wasn't really a typical NCAA case. And certainly you saw in that pretty heavy sanctions, not the death penalty, but very heavy sanctions. And then they eventually got almost entirely walked back. And a lot of people said the NCAA kind of came out embarrassed in that whole situation. So I think that's kind of the backdrop for what's going to happen with Michigan State. You know, certainly they've, as you mentioned, they've started an investigation, but I think Michigan State could – we haven't heard their argument yet, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if their argument is that your NCAA bylaws don't address this and that you are not the right body to be investigating this. You know, Michigan State's being investigated by the Michigan State Attorney General's office. There have been multiple other investigations, right? You know, I wonder if Michigan State's response is eventually going to be stay in your lane, NCAA. We didn't violate any of your rules here, because I think that's, talking to legal experts, that seems to be a tack they could take.
From a reputation standpoint, because that's a very good answer, by the way, and from a legal standpoint, I think that's fair. What you just said, the university should not be held liable from the NCAA because they themselves did not violate any rules or intentionally cover anything up, as it appears that Penn State they did. But from a reputation standpoint, from a recruiting for Tom Izzo, recruiting for Mark D'Antonio standpoint, does Michigan State have a stain on it now because of this that will impact them in terms of trying to get players there, young athletes, and even students there on a campus that is going to be associated with this?
No, certainly. I don't know how. I mean, Michigan State is synonymous right now with Larry Nassar. And, you know, I'm not good enough at public relations to know how you move on from that, because the amount of news coverage it's gotten in the last week, jumping from, like I said, kind of a local story that maybe some outside the area were interested in to something that was on the nightly news every night. And then seeing, you know, high-profile coaches fall and things like that, it's certainly going to have to. I could certainly see, you know, parents of recruits across the country when Michigan State calls, that's going to be the first thing they think of now. So it's certainly going to be a hurdle, I think, going forward for Michigan State to address in recruiting. You know, I wonder about their fundraising, if people are disgusted enough that they're going to have problems raising funds as they have in the past. There's going to be a lot of collateral things, I think, that happen because of this that we don't even know about yet.
Kyle Austin covers Michigan State for MLive.com, and we're talking about the fallout of Dr. Larry Nassar. I'm looking at an NBC report, and I just want your opinion on this, Kyle. Just, I guess, because it goes to the negligence standpoint of people involved with Michigan State and with USA Gymnastics. And the NBC story is 8 times Larry Nassar could have been stopped. And it features 8 girls who made complaints starting as far back as 1997, Larissa Boyce, taking part in the youth program at Michigan State, when she and an anonymous 14-year-old girl told the coach there, Kathy Klages, I'm not sure, that they were uncomfortable with how Nassar put his hands not just on them but in them during their examinations. And then another one in 1999, and it goes through with 8 different girls, 2001, and just to jump, 2004, all the way now to 2014, 2015. This could have been stopped almost 20 years ago, or in fact 20 years ago, had these girls had their complaints and objections taken more seriously. How much more damaging is that for the university that these complaints do go that back that far?
I think it's incredibly damaging, and I think that's why you've seen the wave of resignations that you've kind of seen in the last week. Michigan State, you know, held its own investigation of him in 2014. Police have investigated this, and I think for a lot of people it's heartbreaking to know that, you know, Michigan State was told of all this. They let him continue, and then obviously a lot of things happened to it, the girls after that. So, I guess I can just say that, you know, I think our thinking has evolved as far as, you know, sexual assault and sexual assault allegations, certainly with a lot of things that have happened in the last year involving famous people. So, you know, I guess my hope, and I think everyone's hope going forward, is that these allegations are treated differently when they're made in the future, because certainly there are a lot of issues with how they were treated in the last 17 years, how they've been made.
This isn't really a sports question, and we're doing a sports radio show, and it's sad that we have to talk about things like this because they are associated with, you know, the gymnastics world and Michigan State. But do you think that this is going to be difficult for doctors to examine any female athletes going forward, even if it does require that they have to examine sensitive areas? The reason I brought it up is what you just said about the climate right now. There are a whole lot of people in famous situations, news people, political people, celebrities, actors, producers, and so on and so forth, who have been found to have been doing some horrific things. And then there are other people who didn't do horrific things, but they got caught up in the hashtag MeToo movement. And if anybody ever had a date in which somebody was uncomfortable, that somebody is now saying, they did it too, and reputations are ruined. I wonder if girls can ever get proper care now from male physicians who are going to be very, very scared, to do examinations that might lead to allegations.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an issue. And, not being an expert in this field, I think the first thing I would think of is just transparency. You talk about the allegations have been made against Dr. Nassar. I mean, when he performed these sensitive procedures, you know, he was not wearing gloves. He gave no notice. There were no parents in the room. And that's kind of how it happened. I think going forward, you know, any male doctor that has to perform any sort of sensitive procedure on a female, I mean, I think you just have to be extra, extra careful. And hopefully they were already, but be extra, extra careful that you explain what you're going to do, why you're going to do it, that you have parents in the room.
I was going to say, whether a parent or
if at any point they're uncomfortable with it, that they can say stop. You know, I mean, that's kind of would be my answer to it.
That's a good answer. So, I was going to say, if the parents aren't, then at least a female medical professional, you know, a witness,
right.
somebody there to observe mm-hmm. and to, so, you know, to corroborate what is done and in what context it's done and so on and so forth. I would insist upon that. I don't think I would ever be caught in a room in a situation like that, even as a physician with a young girl, and say, I have to examine you and nobody else is around, because basically anything that is said is going to be he said, she said, and a young girl who is violated should not have that doubt cast upon her. And a doctor who's accused, who hasn't done anything wrong, should not have that doubt cast upon him. So it's really, there probably is going to have to be witnesses, maybe multiple witnesses, before any examinations like that continue.
I agree.
Very troubling. Last thing before you go, can I lighten the mood just for a second?
I'd love it.
How are the Spartans doing? Are they still, are they tracking to be a top seed in the tournament? I know it's still late January. We haven't even gotten through conference play yet or anything else yet to the conference tournaments, but just give me your update on Tom Izzo and the Spartans.
Yeah, you know, they kind of had a rough week there early in January. They lost on the road at Ohio State and then struggled really at home against Rutgers. And then
lost to Michigan, too, right?
Lost at home to Michigan, yeah, which is really the big bummer for them, the big rivalry game that they get up for, to lose that by 10 at home in their place. They were pretty much reeling after that. But, you know, they looked a lot better in a couple of games since. They beat Illinois pretty well on the road. So as far as winning the Big Ten, they have a pretty small margin for error because Purdue's looking pretty good, including beating Michigan last night. But I don't see, you know, outside from the hiccup, I don't see any other reason why they can't get a top seed and make a deep run. I think every team is going to go through a little something at some point, but as long as they can figure out some turnover issues and things of that nature, they certainly have the talent for it.
It's one of the rare seasons at this stage where there are no undefeated teams among the major conference teams and programs. Villanova is number one. They've got a loss. Virginia, Purdue has two. Duke has two. And then Sparty's sitting there with one of a lot of teams with three losses. So, yeah, I agree with you. Everybody's got some warts, and it's just a matter of playing your best at the right time. And that's, of course, as we get into the conference tournament on the way in the NCAAs. Spartans ranked sixth right now. Kyle, thanks so much for the difficult discussion. It really is. And I know it's hard for you to cover it and write about it just because there's nothing comfortable there. But I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Kyle. That's Kyle Austin joining us from MLive.com doing Michigan State coverage.